Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2099, with a release date of Friday, January 19th, 2018, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Radio aids in a dramatic boat rescue. Amateurs start their engines for the return of the AM rally. And Summits on the Air take stock of 2017's accomplishments. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline Report 2099 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Valparaiso, Indiana, here's Paul Brown, WD9-GCO.
We begin this week with breaking news. As Amateur Radio Newsline went to production and on the eve of the ARRL Board of Directors meeting, Tom Gallagher, NY2RF, the league's CEO, announced his retirement effective March 2nd. He told the ARRL that the new federal tax law's impact makes him reluctant to continue working in the state of Connecticut, where the league is headquartered. Tom is credited with, among other things, assisting the league in achieving a turnaround in its finances. A former financial services exec and investment banker, he has been a licensed ham since 1966. We will be following the league's search for his replacement. We now hear an example of amateur radio doing what it does best. Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, brings us this dramatic story of a ham radio net and a sailboat rescue off the coast of Jamaica.
This was one of those times when all that practice paid off. As ham radio operators, we often spend time communicating on our favorite modes and participating in our favorite activities. But the Maritime Mobile Service Net recently had the unfortunate need to make use of their preparation. It's just another example of the phrase from the bumper sticker, "Ham radio saves lives." On January 4th, Net Control Ken Porter, AC0ML, received an emergency call on the net's usual frequency, 14.300. Jim Matusiak, VE0KMP, and his wife were aboard the sailing vessel Solar Flare, dealing with high winds. Jim reported that the ship had lost the two head sails and was operating only with the main sail. Ken informed them that the net would be listening in case there were any additional problems. The next day, the mainsail was also damaged, and the ship's motor wouldn't start. Both Jim and his wife were exhausted and needed to be rescued. Assistant net manager Jeff Savasta, KB4JKL, tells us the rest.
So with the help of additional net control stations here on the Maritime Net, we were able to, in fact, effect a successful rescue via the Jamaican Coast Guard ship HMJS Middlesex. And that was dispatched to the area, and they came on frequency. They actually came on frequency on 14300 to speak with both AC0ML and the Solar Flare that confirmed the positions. And they're not licensed amateurs, but of course, in times of emergency, they can come on at any time, or any station can come on at any time if it's a declared emergency.
The rescue was completed, and everyone is just fine thanks to the help of all who assisted. The net is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year and meets on 14.300 daily from 1700 to 0200 UTC. Jeff sums up the purpose of the Maritime Net.
Our agency motto is where emergency communications is a commitment, and I think this really exemplifies the fact that the Maritime Mobile Service Network operates daily to just listen for these type of emergencies, and we're there serving the public since 1968. And like a lot of the operators who rely on us for this service have said many, many times, it's our lifeline, and it truly is.
Reporting for Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
A BBC TV series about British Railways has got an unlikely co-star, amateur radio, as we hear from Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
What's almost as good as listening to amateur radio? Well, how about watching amateur radio on TV? The BBC series Great British Railway Journeys showcased amateur radio earlier this month in two of the programme's segments, 20 minutes into the narrative. Journalist and host of the documentary series, Michael Portillo, talks to Keith Matthew, G0WYS, of the Poldhue Amateur Radio Club about Marconi's transatlantic signal. And later, Cornwall gets an airing with Brian Coleman, G4NNS, at the Goonhilly Earth Station, using EME to bounce CW and SSB signals off the surface of the moon. Southgate Amateur Radio News notes that this was actually Michael Portillo's second adventure in amateur radio. In 2014, he had a lesson in how to operate Morse code from Peter Watkins, M0BHY, whilst in Chelmsford in Essex. Meanwhile, if you missed the railway programme, the show will remain available on the BBC website for viewers in the UK until the end of the month. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
If you want to rack up the contacts in AM mode, don't turn back the clock. Simply adjust a few settings on your rig, as we hear from Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
Last year's AM rally was so much fun that the organizers have decided to bring it back. On the weekend of February 2nd through 4th, the rally will mix operating nostalgia for old-timers and give newer hams a chance at adventure in a completely different mode. AM, often considered the original amateur radio voice mode, is friendly to all radios from military and boat anchors to homebrew and broadcast, including the newest SDR models as well as vintage radios with tubes. If your radio can run full carrier amplitude modulation, you can be in it to win it. Activity will be on the HF bands except for 60 meters. Rally spokesman Clark Burgard, N1BCG, one of the organizers, said that the goal is simple: to demonstrate that AM is alive and well, and that yes, it still works. There will be plenty of opportunities for certificates of recognition, with categories such as most states contacted to most total contacts, all in five different classes of power output. If you hear the call, CQ AM Rally, go for it. For more details and to download a simple logging program for the event, visit the website at amrally.com. Logs are due no later than the 14th of February. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
Amateur radio is truly a hobby with something for everyone, even those with physical challenges, as our own Hap Holly, KC9RP, knows, and as Kelly Stanfield, W0YQG, recently found out. Like Hap, Stanfield is blind. However, she was introduced to ham radio by a friend who had something in common.
A visually impaired friend of mine named Craig Martin had me out to his house in the early 2000s just to visit and showed me some of his radios. And blind people can do this? Cool. And then my grandpa challenged me in 2008 that if I passed my technician, he'd get my radio for me. I had to take advantage of that because I have to have an extra speech for it in my radio for me to use it. So if grandpa was going to offer to do it, I better take advantage of that offer. And that's my TMV-71A that I still haven't used today.
Stanfield, who has been blind all of her life, said that she was able to study for her exams using Handy Hams lectures that she took with her everywhere as MP3s on her phone. She joined the Benton County, Missouri Aries chapter and the Twin Lakes Amateur Radio Club. When she passed her general, some members of both Aries and the club came up with an idea to surprise Stanfield.
And they surprised me the all get out. I had no clue. I'd just been chatting with people at the October meeting. I said, hey, you know, I just passed the general and I know what radio is recommended for me as a blind user, the Kenwood TS-590. I was just chatting. Next thing I know, come the December meeting, I find out Craig and my uncle, Joe, who's also a ham, KR0UT, were there. And I'm going, okay, something's up if these guys have made a two-hour drive. Then they took me and showed me what people in the club had put together money to get, which was my TS-590. And I had seen one that a friend had when I was up taking the class. And I said to Sam, I said, could this be? Are you serious? And she says, yes, it is. As far as I was concerned, Christmas was done.
Now, two Kenwood radios equipped with factory voice synthesis boards lets her radios talk to her, even as she talks to other hams. Amateur radio is connecting Stanfield to a whole new world, and thanks to the kindness and generosity of hams helping a fellow ham, she's well on her way. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including our own James Pasterfield's KB7 TBT station at 146.520 MHz at 11 a.m. on Saturday, January 20th and 27th, during Quartz Fest at the Yuma, Arizona Proving Grounds throughout February.
Hello?
Now, here's a twist on Boy Meets Girl. It's Ham Meets Ham, and we'll let Jerry Goodrich, K5KRN, explain.
Let's face it, OMs are almost always out there in search of a good YL, and it seems a lot of YLs often can't resist a good OM. If you're thinking that this is a prelude to Hearts and Flowers, however, think again. We're talking about the YL-OM contest. So the real nitty-gritty here is all about signal reports and points. Between the 9th and 11th of February, a benevolent battle of the sexes known as the YL-OM contest will enliven SSB, CW, and digital modes. It's being run by the YLRL, the Young Ladies Radio League, and its popularity has been proven through the years. It's a pursuit that is as old as Adam and Eve, perhaps. Well, except neither one of them had radios. In this contest, YLs count OMs, and OMs count YLs. And everyone counts. For more details, visit YLRL.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jerry Goodrich, KF5KRN.
Enthusiasts of Summits on the Air climbed to great heights in 2017, and Ed Durant, DD5LP, has this summary.
As a review of what has happened in the worldwide Summits on the Air program during 2017, the SOTA Management Team Publicity Officer, Tom Reed, M1EYP, has put out a series of emails which I will summarise. Tom's first highlight, which attracted some publicity in the amateur radio press, was an activation by Colin Evans, M1BUU, who, to break the magic 1,000-point mountain goat level, took a Rockmite CW transceiver kit and tools with him and actually built the equipment on the 2,415 feet high Wernside summit, soldering all the components together in the windshield of a tent before making the needed contacts. Tom's second highlight was a personal one, where he and his son Jimmy, M0HGY, became only the fourth and fifth activators to complete activation of all SOTA summits in Northern Ireland. Well done to both of you in completing this 14-year-long mission. The SOTA scheme awards the Sherpa Award each year to the amateur who the management team judge to have helped in the expansion of the scheme. This year it was Guru, EA2IF from Spain, who received the award of a SOTA Beams Whisper Light unit for all the assistance he has given to help with the classification of new associations both in Europe and South America. Let me add my personal congratulations to Guru, who is always there as a chaser when I activate, and nearly every weekend is out himself activating a summit. One of the Stammtisch of European operators. Following nicely on from the piece about Guru, a list of the 15 new SOTA associations that were added in the scheme during 2017. These ranged from Canada to Ceuta in North Africa, from Mexico to Martinique, and many more. SOTA is truly a worldwide program. Having helped define just one region of one association myself, I can understand the level of work involved, and the scheme could not expand without a lot of work done by a few people making this all possible. Tom's fifth email shows a list of the all-time top 20 activators of the now over 5,900 registered. The table is by the number of QSOs made. Not surprisingly, for a scheme that started in Europe, all but one of the 20 operators are from Europe. But there is a US activator, George KX0R, in there at number 10. Needless to say, I'm nowhere to be seen in this list, but I'm enjoying being part of the SOTA community nonetheless. Have you climbed a hill taking your radio gear with you lately? If not, why not? All information about the SOTA scheme can be found on the web at www.sota.org.uk.
Our thanks to Ed Durant, DD5LP, for that report. In some regions, there's ice on the rooftops, snow on the ground, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for Winter Field Day, as we hear from Jack Parker, W9ISH, in this report courtesy of Amateur News Weekly.
That's right, Winter Field Day. It started in 2007 as a way to encourage hams around the world to dress up, set up, and enjoy the beauty of operating outdoors in January. Now, if that idea leaves you cold, there's always the indoor home station category. Or how about coffee, donuts, and the warm confines of your local EOC radio room? Those are all possibilities. There are three categories: indoor, outdoor, and home. The rules are similar to those for ARRL Field Day. Operation will take place on all HF bands except for 12, 14, 30, and 60 meters. There will be no points for VHF, UHF, and satellite contacts. One well-known East Coast station has announced their intent to participate. W1AW will be warming the airwaves January 27th and 28th. Winterfield Day begins at 1900 UTC. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time. According to the ARRL, the past 9 Winterfield Day contests have drawn even more participants each year. So, don't let this operating opportunity slip by. This is Jack Parker, W8ISH.
Our thanks to Amateur News Weekly for this report. For news of the Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana area, listen at amateurnewsweekly.com. For hams in Australia, January 26th isn't just Australia Day. It's a day for an important call sign prefix, as we learn from John Williams, VK4JJW.
If you're on the air on Friday the 26th of January and log a contact with an Australian ham who has an AX prefix, you haven't stumbled upon some kind of historic first for a new license class for Australia. The story behind the prefix is historic in its own right. Radio amateurs have the opportunity to use it to commemorate Australia Day, which marks the arrival of the first fleet of British ships at Port Jackson, New South Wales, in Sydney, in 1788. AX is much sought after among prefix hunters and used by Australian amateurs on Anzac Day and World Telecommunications Day as well. For non-hams, the day will be marked by flying the national flag, setting off fireworks and welcoming immigrants who've become the newest Australian citizens. Hams expect to be quite busy, as always, doing what they do best. The Wireless Institute of Australia is urging amateurs to feature the prefix AX instead of the usual VK on a special QSL card marking the day. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
In the world of DX, be listening for Rick, NE8Z/HC1MD, operating from Ecuador between January 20th and February 10th, using the call signs HC1MD, HC1MD/2, and HC1MD/7 at various locations there. He will be operating at times from the Amazon jungle and other times on the Pacific Ocean coastline. Send QSLs direct to K8LJG or via Logbook of the World after the trip. We end this week's report with a story of adventure and volunteerism. It comes to us from Down Under. And with this story, we welcome the newest addition to our Amateur Radio Newsline family, Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
Shane Lynn, VK4K8Z, a radio amateur from far north Queensland, has been doing quite a bit of building whilst on his annual holiday in the Solomon Island village of Bassone. For 5 weeks he's worked as a volunteer, helping to construct a guest house, and he's also been installing underground electrical cable, diesel generators, water tanks, and even a flushing toilet and septic tank. Shane has also been building something else in that small remote island village, an amateur radio community. He's been teaching a number of teenagers in the village how to operate on the air in the hope that they'll end up pursuing a license with a H44 prefix. In fact, they've been getting on the air on 6 metres under supervision and calling CQ. The teens have been in company for that. In whatever spare time he has, Shane has been operating as H44DA from his holiday home on most HF bands, but largely 6 metres. He writes on his QRZ page that he's always happy to recommend the village to visitors, but warns the curious that there's no TV or internet. The area, however, is very ham radio friendly, he goes on to say, and especially after his most recent visit, which ends this month, it may just end up a whole lot more friendlier. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Rob Broomhead, VK3DN.
With thanks to Allen Labs, Amateur News Weekly, the ARRL, Clark Burgard, N1BCG, CQ Magazine, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, the IARU, the Irish Radio Transmitter Society, Jeff Savasta, KB4JKL, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, QRZ, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Ted Randall's QSO Radio Show, the Wireless Institute of Australia, WTWW Shortwave, the Young Ladies Radio League, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Please send emails to our address at newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website at arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO in Valparaiso, Indiana, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2018. All rights reserved.